We are now early on in the 18th century, and Spain, after years of trouble on various fronts and the change of dynasty on top of that, has set off in a new direction. Welcome to another episode of Spanish History 101, brought to you by Brian Spain Domain. And today we are going to talk about Felipe the Fifth, or Philip the Fifth, and his reign as king. Philip the Fifth and his supporters in the end were victorious in the War of the Spanish Succession, and that was from 1701 to 1715 approximately, and the Bourbon dynasty was installed on the throne and has basically been there ever since. That is, if we skip over a couple of short-lived attempts at a republic. And then there was a lengthy dictatorship and another brief moment when another royal family from Italy came in for a very brief stint. But we'll get to all of that in due time. One thing that stands out about Felipe V's reign is that it is the longest ever in the history of this country. It lasted 45 years and 3 days, and it was actually divided almost evenly into two parts, and I'll explain why that is in a second. The first half started in 1700 and went on until 1724, but it was sort of unusual for the fact that for a long time, Felipe didn't have full control over the country, and that was due to the War of the Spanish Succession. And this was especially true of the first 5 to 7 years when his main competitor, Charles of Austria, actually occupied the capital, Madrid, on two occasions, even though he wasn't very well received there. And then after the Battle of Almansa in 1707, which was a victory for Felipe, this Bourbon king began to make important decisions that would affect this country profoundly. It's even safe to say that some of them are still affecting Spain to this day, I mean, to this very week. And I am talking about the famous series or group of decrees known as the Nueva Planta, which literally means new plant, but I guess sort of means new setup, new design. And what was this all about? If you recall in earlier episodes, we said that Spain, up until this point, had been, in reality, a handful of kingdoms ruled by one king, but a king who, for the most part, respected the different laws and institutions and governments of these kingdoms and other regions. Felipe, when he came in, decided to get rid of all that notion by eliminating the different kingdoms' self-ruled powers, and essentially making them all answerable to the monarch of Spain, and by that I mean Castile. The first of these decrees was destined for the kingdom of Aragon, Castile's traditional partner. It was made up of the kingdom of Aragon itself, the kingdom of Valencia, and Catalonia. Aragon and Valencia were the first to lose their self-rule powers. The institutions, the parliaments, were dissolved. And while it may have been Felipe's plan all along to centralize Spain, and that sort of made sense because his grandfather, Louis XIV, King of France, had done the same there, these were clearly measures taken as sort of revenge on those regions. Aragon, Valencia, and Catalonia for their support of Felipe's rival for the throne, Charles of Austria. There was another decree, another Nueva Planta for Catalonia in 1716, after that region finally surrendered to Felipe's forces. Here, the region was subdivided according to the Castilian system and the Castilian tradition, and the parliament was dissolved. Catalonia held on to a few more self-rule rights than Aragon, but here, Castilian Spanish was imposed as the language of official business. The language issue has always been a contentious one because many from those regions, like Catalonia, feel that this was sort of the beginning of the threat to their local language. But that's not entirely true, although it might have had something to do with it. Spanish, in a lot of ways, was already encroaching on these areas in a natural way for quite some time. The way powers and their economies move into other regions, their languages also tend to take over. And that was sort of happening with Castilian Spanish up until then. The Nueva Planta didn't affect everyone. Other regions like Navarra in the Basque Country managed to hold on to their old charters, in part because they supported Felipe during the war. But don't forget that this Nueva Planta also affected Castile itself. There was a massive reorganization of the government there, and there were elements there, different consejos, there are different sort of agencies that completely either lost their power or were reworked. So this was happening to Castile itself, not just to the other regions. It's another thing to take into consideration. Anyway, the important thing is to remember that Felipe and his administration are known for making massive efforts towards unifying Spain more formally. And it's at this time where people who live there, the inhabitants of all those regions, are now starting to be considered Spanish, not just Castilians or Navarrans or Catalonians. It's a very complex subject, but essentially it was an attempt to unify the country under one administration. Basically, in short, they were saying that there were no longer going to be a group of different administrations, different kingdoms, but one big one known as Spain. So there are those who don't consider the time of Isabella and Ferdinand to be the unification moment, but this period, the real modern Spain, becomes unified. And in a certain way, there is some logic behind it. It would do away with all the provincial peculiarities, the different laws, the different systems, and make the government work more efficiently. These reforms, in theory, called on the hiring of specialists in the different fields, people who were trained and competent at their jobs. Before, it had more to do with social class than merit. So, in short, we were talking about professionals, sort of public servants. As you can expect, the reality was often something quite different, but at least the intent was there, and this is important to note. Additional reforms were intended for the economy, which had struggled for a long time due to costly living, costly wars, and general mismanagement of finances, the kind of mix that will do in any economy. As we've mentioned in other episodes, Spain had gone bankrupt probably a dozen times in the last 150 years, and that's considering that in theory, it was one of the mightiest empires in the world, and in theory, one of the richest. But once again, if you don't handle that money correctly, if you mismanage, it doesn't mean much. So Felipe's administration managed to bring some structure to everything, and that included the unification of the currency, always an easy way to fuse a country. Other reforms included the military, which Felipe realized was in dire need of an upgrade. In fact, his success in Spain during the War of the Spanish Succession had more to do with the French army handling the fighting than the Spanish one. And the navy, the famous Spanish navy, with its long and illustrious history, also needed shaping up, and he began to work on that. And finally, mention should be made for education, which had been dominated by the church since as long as anyone could remember. But now secular schools began to appear. Emphasis once again was placed on using trained teachers, something that wasn't often the case before. And universities were created, new universities were created. And in keeping with the times, greater emphasis was being given to the sciences, something which had been sorely lacking in Spanish higher education for a long time. Culturally speaking, it was during these years that the Royal Academy of the Spanish Language was founded. That was in 1713. We are talking about the maximum authority on Spanish. And that was followed by the launching of the Royal Academy of History in 1738. So, on paper, so much of this sounded pretty sensible, pretty 18th century, reason, logic, well thought out plans and projects, just the kind of things this country needed. But unfortunately, it didn't work out quite as hoped, at least for now. Things went slower, there were more complications. Part of this had to do with the fact that it simply wasn't that easy to turn things around. Many of these reforms were logically met with resistance from many of the groups who didn't want to relinquish their control or power. And so the idea of having civil servants truly prepared to run the country may have sounded nice, but the classic ruling class remained for the most part because they didn't want to give up that power. So that was one thing. And there were more, but first let me tell you a little bit about Felipe's personal life. He was married to Maria Luisa of Savoy from Italy, to whom he was greatly devoted. She would give birth to two future kings. Maria Luisa proved to be particularly adept at handling many of the state affairs, especially when her husband was absent out fighting the War of the Spanish Succession. She would die, unfortunately, at the young age of 25 in 1714, and though her life was short, she made a very positive impression on the people of Spain, but especially the people of Madrid. She was very much loved and very much respected. That very same year, 1714, Felipe would marry again to another Italian woman named Isabel or Elizabeth Farnesio. Elizabeth was a large woman, imposing both physically and in terms of her personality. She was a tough cookie. She apparently had excellent management skills, was very cultured, but a strong character and wasn't easy to be around, nor was she one to take no for an answer. They would stay married for the rest of their lives. And in 1724, Felipe abdicated, leaving the throne to his son, Luis. Why did he do that? Well, now some say that he wanted to become the new king of France after the death of Louis XV, which basically would have gone against a promise he made he would never do. But I guess if he abdicated, he would have been eligible. But most likely the reason was that he was suffering from some pretty serious mental health issues, which was another reason why a number of his reforms were slow in developing. Some studies suggest that he was possibly bipolar. Suffice it to say, there were many times when he just was too impaired to be up for the job. So Luis took over and became Luis the First, although he probably should have been Luis the Short, because unfortunately for Felipe, and much more so for Luis, the new king died just 10 months later from smallpox, and Felipe was compelled to return. By this time, he was a shadow of the dashing ruler of his early days. All the same, he would reign for another 21 years. But who was running the show then? Well, as Felipe's mental health began to slide, the role of Isabel Farnesio would increase, to the point that she was essentially sort of the unofficial ruler of the country. And with that, we start the second half of Felipe's reign, which was dominated more by developments on the foreign front. When the War of Spanish Succession came to an end, even though Felipe had succeeded in retaining the throne, it came at a price. He had to renounce any aspirations to ascending to the throne of France. Spain lost pretty much all of its possessions in Europe, as well as Minorca and Gibraltar to the British, and Spain also had to give up a lot of trading rights to the English, among which the most controversial was the slave trade. Felipe would spend a great deal of his diplomatic and bellicose efforts during those years trying to scrape back some of those territories that he lost. And this came through three wars. The first was the War of the Polish Succession in the 1730s, where Felipe's son Carlos, the future King Carlos III, was proclaimed King of Naples. The second was the War of the Austrian Succession. So there are lots of wars of succession century. This was from 1740 to 1748, where Spain recovered more territories in Italy as well as Sicily. So some of the land that they lost was recovered. And then there was the famous War of Jenkins' Ear, which is probably more famous for its name than the actual events that took place during the conflict. But let me tell you a little bit about it. As the story goes, in 1731, a Spanish ship stopped a British ship, a merchant ship in the Caribbean, to inspect its cargo. They suspected smuggling. The English ship's captain, Mr. Jenkins, was reportedly tied to the mast of the ship, and his ear was cut off as retribution for his illegal acts. Though it was never, or it's never been verified if his cargo was illegal, as far as I know. In any event, about 8 years later, in an act of political manipulation, an actual conflict broke out. The ear thing was the emotional trigger, but the actual war had more to do with trade rights and an overt attempt by the British to take control of the Caribbean. Though the English won some notable victories like Portobello, which is where the London neighborhood gets its name from, it was also landed a humiliating defeat in Cartagena de las Indias at the hands of a staunch Spanish defense mounted by the astute military commander Blas de Lezo. So sure were the English of victory at that battle that they were actually minting victory medals in commemoration of a triumph that would never take place. Traditional Spaniards often look to this episode as a classic example of the English suffering a great defeat and not giving it the attention it probably deserved, and then making a big deal over things like the Spanish Armada. Anyway, while that war wasn't a gain for Spain in terms of territory, pretty much, in a sense it was because they were able to defend their territories and their interests in that part of the world. Felipe died in 1748 in the Palacio de Buen Retiro, which was a former royal residence that was torn down in the 1800s. Pretty much all that is left of this palace are its gardens, which now comprise Madrid's most important park, El Retiro. His body was taken to his favorite palace called La Granja, which is next to Segovia. Speaking of which, we should note that Felipe's reign was also known for its construction of a whole new generation of palaces, many of which are royal residence today. The architectural style is a departure from the more sober Habsburg vision and closer to the French palaces that the Bourbons made famous worldwide, thinking of like Versailles, that style. The one I just mentioned, La Granja, is located very close to Segovia at the foot of the Guadarrama Mountains. Another was a smaller but elegant palace or big mansion not far from La Granja called Rio Frio. It's basically a hunting lodge or was a hunting lodge. But then you had the main feature itself, the Royal Palace, the Palacio Real itself in Madrid. Before that, there was an old palace fortress called the Alcázar, which had been around for centuries and centuries, and which had survived thanks to numerous renovations that were being done every once in a while to keep it up to date with the times. Now, the result was a disjointed and awkward structure, and probably ill-suited after hundreds of years to modern living. Anyway, in 1734, on Christmas Eve, the Alcázar caught fire and basically burned to the ground. It would be replaced by the magnificent and very French Bourbon style Palacio Real, which is the one that is popular among tourists. So those are other things that took place during his reign. Felipe V hasn't always gotten the best press over the years, but this has sort of always baffled me because there is a lot to say about this period. It's undeniable that the country was definitely undergoing some big changes. A new vision for Spain was conceived. The changes were implemented, or at least initiated regarding many aspects of life, many aspects of the country's setup. And there was this concerted effort to modernize the country and prepare it for the future. On the other hand, it is equally true that he did do quite a bit of damage to relations with former kingdoms. But then again, it depended on which kingdom you're talking about or which region you're talking about. Catalonian separatists today will point to this period as the root of all their problems. And then again, Valencia, on the other hand, which was a kingdom itself, lost its independence during this time. And they are, for the most part, very, very pro-Spain. So not everyone reacted in the same way to this new system. This sort of stuff happens all the time. Remember, Spanish history is still heavily politicized, or at least the way people talk about it. And virtually no moment is told from one perspective. This is true of Spanish history throughout its history, probably more so starting the time of Ferdinand and Isabella, and especially true of Spain starting this period with Felipe V going forward. But in the end, I must say that I've always been sort of impressed by the period of Felipe V than many are willing to give him credit for or give it credit for. I just think it doesn't get the attention that it deserves. And that the attention that it does get is often probably excessively negative. I may be off here. Please feel free to give your opinion here. But it was certainly a moment where Spain was changing and going a different direction, and probably more organized than it had been in the past. And anyway, that will be all for this episode of Spanish History 101. Please feel free to leave any questions or comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian's Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.